It's coming up in Texas next weekend on a Monday.
Catholic Connection, weekday mornings at 8 a.m. on 990 WDEO.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
My next guest has become a good friend in the last few years because of our shared love of golf, particularly of Hickory golf, and is playing golf with clubs from the 1920s and sort of going back to what we think of as the pure game. His name is Brian Schumann, and he's from Long Island. He grew up there. He attended New York Institute of Technology and got his bachelor's degree in 1981, became a promoter and a producer of large-scale family events. He worked with artists like Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, Pink Floyd, Grateful Dead in the 70s and 80s, and went on to create a company in 1985 that produced large-scale corporate sales meetings and trade shows. Then he went on and he founded a company, Fair Productions. It runs events primarily on the East Coast from New York to Florida. And these are large family events featuring entertainment like circuses, magic shows, petting zoos, and so forth. And these shows have attracted over 3 million people since he's been doing them. Brian Schumann, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thank you so much.
And Brian, you're on the show because you're a good friend and you've gone through very, very tough times over the last 4 or 5 months because of the death of your beautiful, wonderful daughter, Jordan. We want to talk a little bit about that and about the impact it's had on your life and how you have survived thus far and some of the unusual twists and turns that that route of survival has taken. Would it be fair for me to ask you to just tell our listeners what happened to Jordan? And we'll start there, and if you can handle doing that, please do.
Yeah. I mean, basically, the long and short of it, it was a car accident. She was as is typical of her, you know, somebody has to switch shifts with her. She was a TV news reporter in South Carolina, and somebody else wanted Christmas Eve off. And Jordan said, sure, she switched, and was heading for about a two-hour trip up to a friend and his family, who she had been to see many times in North Carolina, just over the border. And she made it about an hour and 50 minutes of the trip, with about 10 minutes to go, and approached a intersection where, unfortunately, it was very, very, very poorly marked. There was actually no indication that she was approaching an intersection in this small town, and she unfortunately was heading directly to the restaurant to meet this family instead of their home, where she knew how to get to. This was a brand new route, I guess, that Google Maps or Waze was sending her. And the long and short of it was pitch black out. There were no lights, there were no signals. It was pouring rain on a horrible night, and unfortunately got broadsided by a car, and she was taken instantly.
She died instantly.
Instantly.
And she was how old?
22 and about 4 months.
And she was already a rising star, on-air local news reporter. She had a remarkable presence, as I've seen in photographs and videos. And she was obviously headed for quite a life, quite a career.
You know, she was headed for the stars. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, and now that's 5 months ago. She already had an incredible life. She already had an incredible career. It just wasn't nearly long enough. And I think that all of the people, professional people, you know, that have seen her before and after on her videos and seen her work, every single one commented, you know, what an unbelievable amount of potential that Jordan has in front of her. I mean, she went to University of Miami. She wanted to be in broadcast journalism. She could have easily been an actress or a singer. She was unbelievably gifted naturally as a talent. And went to University of Miami because that's where she wanted to go in high school.
I think she had the most beautiful smile I've ever seen.
She, everybody says that. I mean, if I told you once, if I heard it once, I heard it a thousand times that she lit up a room. And at the fair this last 4 weeks, at different fairs, all people that have known us since she was 3 or 4 years old said, oh, my God, her smile lit up the entire Midway, which is saying a lot, considering you have giant Ferris wheels and other things with many, many lights on them. And for everybody to say that her smile lit up the Midway is an unbelievable, credit to her. And that was her personality coming through.
It was the love, and y'all were extremely close as a family, and your other son, your other child, Justin.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And as a result of this, your search for just simply survival and for some peace of mind and relief has led you in part to create a foundation. Can you tell us about the foundation you've created?
Sure. Well, you know, I think that, and I've done a lot of thinking about this, you know, you hear these horrible, horrible stories about other parents that have gone through tragedy or other people that have gone through tragedy, and having never gone through something like that, you say, oh, my goodness, how do they survive? How do they go on? How do they breathe? How do they keep putting one foot in front of the other? And until it happens to you, you really don't know the kind of resiliency that you have in your body, you know, and your mind and your heart. And very, very, very soon after this happened, I personally went from, you know, suicidal tendencies to saying, okay, I still want her in my life. I don't accept what happened, so I need to be with her every single day. So how can I do that? And how can I honor her, and how can I continue her legacy all at the same time? And the answer was to start this foundation. And we thought about a couple of different names, and we settled, just literally one or two names, settled on, which came very quickly, actually, the Jordan Schumann Foundation for Kindness, because kindness is a thing, I think, that she believed, and we all believe, there's not nearly enough of. It's very easy to do, and there's no reason not to do it. And kindness should be just as simple as breathing for most people, but unfortunately, in this day and age, it's not.
And there is a website, which we'll talk about several times. It's the Jordan Schumann Foundation.org, and that's Schumann with one N. Brian, you come from a Jewish background, and on the golf course every now and then, as we were getting to know each other, we would joke about that. But one thing that was very striking in your dealing with this is how open you were to spiritual guidance from whoever could give it to you. And I understand you got on the phone with a Trappist monk from Conyers, Georgia. Is that right?
Yeah, that was kind of interesting.
Brother Mark.
Wonderful, wonderful man. Peaceful, you could just tell, a peaceful, gentle man, Brother Mark. At the Monastery for the Holy Spirit, and I think when something like this happens, I guess that a person can go either way, meaning lose all faith in everything, or search for the truth, or search for faith, or search for spirituality, or just on a search for your daughter, which is what I am doing. I'm on a search for my daughter, you know, and in speaking with Brother Mark, who was asked to speak or suggested to speak to, we had a long conversation. He unfortunately is very familiar with grief, and I believe runs several grief retreat weekends and whatnot. And he was very impressed with the way that I was going about this. And I wasn't really sure what he was talking about at the time, but he said that in all the years, he really hasn't spoken to somebody who has just, I guess the term is, you know, not leaving any stone unturned. You know, I just immediately, quite literally a couple of days after it happened, just started seeking out anyone and everyone that could just try to give me answers. You know, I think at the beginning, I kept going and going to people in the hopes that somebody would say, you know what, you really do love your daughter so much, we'll bring her back for you. We'll get her back here for you. This is not fair. And I think that was the delusion that I was under. However, the more and more people you speak from all different faiths, you know, whether it was Brother Mark or whether it was a rabbi, my own rabbi or a different rabbi or anybody and everybody I spoke to, over the months and months, you come to terms with the reality of it that she's in physical form. She's not coming back. So what do you do to survive mentally, physically, you know, because a tragedy, a split-second tragedy like this takes so many forms. I mean, you suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder because you play the accident over and over in your mind 1,000 times, even though you were 700 miles away, you know, and you
told me that you went down there again in the daylight, and whatever stop sign was down there was like 100 yards from the intersection. Is that right?
Well, we had never been there before at all, and on our drive down to Florida, which was about 2 months after the accident, on the drive down for the winter, I made it a point, you know, to stop. I needed to see it. You know, my poetic side said I was with my baby's first breath, and I wanted to see where she took her last, and I needed to see that for myself. And as soon as we got to this intersection, and I had never seen the traffic report, I could not deal with seeing that. I couldn't hear the details other than it was, you know, horrific accident. But after we saw it, we instantly saw what happened. You know, there was a stop sign, which was basically signaling a side street maybe 100 feet up from the intersection. And on the actual intersection, a little small side street on the actual intersection called Route 200, there was literally just a white line on the ground and the word stop, faded paint.
That really helps it in the dark and in the rain.
Yes. So, and even during the day, well, it was clearly a place where visitors or travelers, I should say, would not typically go. When we were there on a Sunday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, you would think in your mind the only people out at 8 o'clock in the morning in a rural area are local people. And every single car or pickup truck that passed by that intersection, they went right through the stop sign and knew to stop at the white line at the major road.
Right.
But if it's dark and raining and you stop at the first stop sign and you look and you see a little teeny road, you go, okay, and then you proceed on.
How did the people treat you down there? Did they know why you were there?
You know, my daughter is special beyond. She just is. And it's a combination of so many things. Her spirit when she was here was just glowing. As you said, her smile would just glow. She would just set everybody in such a phenomenal mood that, plus the fact that she was absolutely gorgeous, smart, everybody down there knew the story because she was in the TV broadcast industry, because she was only 22, because she was a rising star, because she had unlimited potential in that field, her story of the accident got carried around the world. And especially locally, it was a pretty big story. So when we were there that morning, two, you know, troopers in different cars stopped by. Just
oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. No, we were.
You were there with your son, Justin, right?
No. I was there with Patrice, my fiance.
Oh, with your fiance.
So we were on the way down to Florida. And two different, you know, police officers had stopped by just because we were there basically. I don't know what they call it, primal therapy, you know, in essence.
Right.
Screaming, crying, praying, picking up pieces of her car that were still there, little teeny pieces. Just.
Oh, no. You're telling me you were able to find fragments of the car?
It was finding fragments of my daughter, you know, and that's...
Do you think that was a good idea?
You know what? When you're in such shock from such tragedy, and you will do anything in the world to get back your daughter, get back this love that is just irreplaceable, you do anything you can. And when you see a little teeny piece of something, you know, to me,
yeah.
I did not go to my daughter's apartment in South Carolina. Her mom, stepdad, and her brother, Justin, went and did that. They cleaned out the apartment, so to speak, which is a bad way of saying it, but that is what happened. And all the clothes that Jordan had, which were beautiful clothes, were all donated to sorority sisters up in that area who she knew of and befriended her when she went to that town. They were given to women that were from battered situations to get them back on their feet a little bit. All her shoes, all her beautiful clothing, all her dresses that would be great for interviews all went to people and women like that that could use the help and that just needed help. And just kind acts like that, you know, that Jordan's mom, Perry, did, and because that's what Jordan would have done.
I'm talking with my good friend Brian Schumann, who went through suffered a great tragedy at Christmas time this year, the loss of his 22-year-old daughter, Jordan. I understand you're also thinking about going on a very classic pilgrimage route, the Camino de Santiago, sometime in the fall.
Yes.
Now, where did you hear about this, and why does that attract you?
Well, immediately after the accident, a day or two after, we received a phone call from a friend that my fiance Patrice knows of 30 years. Unfortunately, his son overdosed and died 5 years earlier. And he suggested very strongly that I go see a grief counselor right away. And I did. And this grief counselor was not what I expected. She's extremely spiritual, and I had no idea what grief counseling was all about. I thought it was just the five phases of grief, and that was the end of it. And, you know, they say, okay, phase one, two, three, four, five, you're done.
And, you know, that sounds so much like you, Brian.
Well, that's what I thought. You know, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. So I just...
But you're very methodical.
But I thought, you know, stage one, 3 months. Stage two, month 4 to 6. You know, I didn't know. And she says, oh, you know, we can talk about that, and I can explain what it is. It'll take about 5 minutes. But we'll be, in counseling, you know, if you really take to this, we'll, you know, this will be a lifelong process. You know, grief is a process that never ends, is what she said to me. And in the first month or so of the process, she had mentioned that this other fellow went on this trip and that she had gone on this trip to Camino.
Oh, she made the pilgrimage herself.
Yes, she made the pilgrimage herself a few years ago. And what completely got me hook, line, and sinker was that, unfortunately for her, my grief counselor, she had lost a child at birth. And she said she did the pilgrimage, and over the pilgrimage, over the course of the week and a half or 2 weeks that she did, about 200 kilometers, that she had such spiritual awakenings in relation to her son that I just said, this is for me. I mean,
right.
If there's a way or a place that I need to go to find my daughter, and she's going to come to me because you're on this pilgrimage, you're out in the open, and you're communing, you know, with nature and whatnot. I said, then that's me. I'm going. So
you're also communing with centuries of pilgrims.
Yes.
Who've gone across the same land and mountains in Spain.
Well, and she told me if I wanted to learn a little bit about it, she said there's a movie called The Way.
That's right.
And the movie, there are a couple of versions of it, actually. One is more of a documentary. But the one that I happened to see first was just a Hollywood version, so to speak, featuring Martin
Sheen, right?
And the long and short of his story was his son took off for the Camino, and on the very first night he was out, he had a horrible storm in the Pyrenees, and he died. And the father got the phone call on the golf course, and just same way as me, shock, you know, craziness, you can't believe it. He flew to retrieve his son and decided while he was there he would continue the son's journey, which he started out to do and only made it one night. And in my case, it just resonated with me so much that, and this also was going to sound like me when you hear me say this deal, I went out right away and bought 3 or 4 pair of hiking shoes and all the proper attire that one would need on a hike. And I... And the poles to do the walk, and I'm, you know, the fact that I need to train for this, that'll come second, but at least I have all the accoutrements to get going. So, but I'm in search of my daughter, and I'm looking forward to it very much so.
I find it remarkable that, you know, you from a Jewish background, from Long Island, very successful businessman, that you are so open to, you know, other spiritual traditions in receiving help in the midst of this grief?
Well, you know, if you mentioned at the top of the show that, you know, we both met through our love and respect and passion for old-fashioned golf, if you want to call it that, you know, sort of, you know, hickory golf, but it's old-fashioned. And I think that the reason that I and you and a lot of other of our friends do have such a passion for it is because we care about history and we care about who came before us and we know that that's important. And all too often in modern-day culture, it's, you know, 15 minutes of fame and it's what's happening now and what went before doesn't really matter. And that's just horrible. I mean, the way people, you know, sometimes treat grandparents and treat the elders is just horrible. You know, I mean, these are all people we need to learn from, and they've done it before. You know, and it was silly not to honor them and to continue their legacies and continue, you know, the journey that they started.
And I want our listeners to hear one story about you and Jordan, and I want you to tell them about the Billy Joel concert that you went to with her.
If you're from Long Island, there are two laws. One law is when you retire, you must go to South Florida. The other law is that growing up, you must love Billy Joel. And what Billy has done, even though, I mean, I worked with him very, very long time ago, 1977, 8, 9, 80. Jordan's mom was very friendly with him as well. Jordan's mom was a co-host of a local rock and roll radio show back in the early 80s and whatnot. And Billy was just a Long Island guy, and he still is. He just is. He's very, very, you know, down to earth and very, very accessible on Long Island. The Nassau Coliseum, where I had first gone to see my first concert I ever went to, which was Elton John. I was in 10th grade. And that night I decided this is what I'm going to do. I knew I couldn't play piano well enough. I knew I couldn't sing well enough. But I knew in my mind that I could bring all these people together to create this kind of energy and excitement that I had never experienced before in my life that night. So over the next 40 years, from working at the Nassau Coliseum for the biggest Nassau, biggest concert promoter, to having my own company producing home shows and various flower shows and car shows and real estate shows, expos, things like that, I became one of the largest promoters in the building. It was the concert promoter on one side and me on the other side doing consumer shows. So you fast forward 40 years, and the Nassau Coliseum is now under major renovations, and August 4th, of last year, they announced that they were closing the Nassau Coliseum, and Billy Joel was the final performer. So, as is typical of Jordan and myself, she'd be the first phone call I'd make, which I did. I said, "Joe, you know, Billy's playing the Coliseum last night. They're closing the Coliseum. Would you come with me?" And she says, "So as long as I can get a day off, I'll come." So she, it turned out to be the most magical, cosmic, karmic evening ever. It started by her flying up from South Carolina in the afternoon and me picking her up on the curb at the airport. And as I picked her up on the curb, as she opened the door, Billy's line in his song, "I Love You Just the Way You Are," the timing was perfect. As she opened the door, he's singing on the radio, "I Love You Just the Way You Are." Complete happenstance. It was on a satellite radio station. We end up going to the show. I say, "Hey, honey, you want to see where I first sat at the very first show 40 years ago?" She says, "Sure." It's as far away from the stage as you possibly can get. While we're standing there, a young fella comes over to us and says, "Hey, where are your seats?" We said, "Oh, they're up here somewhere, you know, far away." He said, "How would you like to go closer?" He said, "What?" He says, "Yeah, I can, let me see your tickets." He basically traded them for us for second row. Jordan, being the news reporter that she is, says, "Dad, don't give me your tickets yet. What if these are not real? You know, what if these are not real?" She just went into reporting mode and said, whoa, explain this. What's going on here?" And he went on to explain that he works with Billy Joel for the production team. And Billy doesn't like when scalpers get the first few rows, so they seek real fans before the show starts to trade tickets with. So I believe very strongly that the reason he chose us as two fans is that Jordan's beautiful and 22, and he was a boy and he was 25.
Right. That's pretty easy to figure out.
It is pretty funny when you look at the first three rows, and there's a lot of attractive girls in the first three rows. It wasn't too hard to figure out, even for me. So she says, whoa, wait a second. You don't understand. She says, you don't know who my dad is. My dad started here in this seat back here, and then 40 years later, he became the biggest promoter in the building, and he does the Nassau Coliseum Fair, and he this, and he that, and blah, blah, blah. So the gentleman says, well, second row tickets are not going to be good for your father then. And I'm crying from this whole experience, because this is my whole life in a circle of life in one night.
Right.
And he says, well, second row won't do you. Here's first row tickets. At which point, I really started to cry. She really started to say, are you for real? Is this really real? I'm tearing. She's questioning him, and he says, trust me, they're real. And we took the first row seats, and we ended up in seat one and two, row one, and we basically used the stage as a ledge for our cell phones and things like that for the whole show.
Did Billy know you were there?
What happened was I had turned around. At one split second, I turned around right after Paul Simon went on. He was a special guest. At the moment I turned around, the gentleman that started me in my career 40 years ago, the concert promoter, happened to be standing there. He looked at me. Our eyes met. He threw his hands in the air. He came running around the little backstage bicycle fence that was there, separating front from backstage. Gave me the biggest hug in the world. Couldn't believe I was there. And I thankfully, fortunately, was able to introduce him to Jordan. And Jordan took a picture of the two of us together. And we started talking. And I told him how we were sitting in these front row seats. And his response was, oh, my God, I got to tell Billy. He's going to flip out that it was you. He's not going to believe this was you. That is so amazing. Out of all the people here, he was going on and on and on. To the point where I really thought he was about to run up on stage to tell Billy the story. And I said, Ronnie, no, it's okay. Tell him after the show. You don't need to tell him now. It's not that big a story. But he was so excited that the tickets were so meaningful to somebody by pure happenstance that he was just very excited. And the night was just a magical night that just could not have happened any better, because literally it was from the back row to the front row, a 40-year odyssey, you know, 40 years of working and striving and being as perfectionist as you can to do the best you can, best job you can, and to be able to share it with my daughter, first row. My son was also there with a friend. My fiance Patrice was there with a friend. They all had the regular seats, and they weren't fortunate enough to meet this one fella who put us in row one.
We're going to pause for a break. I'm talking with Brian Schumann about unfortunate death of his daughter, but the creation of the Jordan Schumann Foundation for Kindness, and about how to survive when something this horrible happens to you. We'll be back after just a few moments.
What does it mean to forgive? Have you ever had trouble forgiving someone because the wound was just too deep? Have you found it difficult to turn to the Lord for forgiveness of our own sins? The Men of Invictus Christus have organized a Eucharistic procession for all men to make reparation for the burden of sin. The event is being held on Saturday, July 16th from Shrine of the Little Flower to St. Mary's Catholic Church through downtown Royal Oak. For event information and registration, go to christinthestreets.eventbrite.com.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, while the separation of church and state has been enshrined in modern Western culture, there is one particular Eastern church that can show us that this may not be totally a good thing.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO Ave Maria Radio.
You remember the day you first laid eyes on her. They handed you the keys and you drove back home for everyone to admire. And although the memories have been made, it's time to pass the torch to someone else. Consider donating your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Even if it's not running, we'll take care of everything from pickup to your tax receipt. Just call 866-628-CARS to show you just how easy it is to donate. That's 866-628-CARS. And mention Ave Maria Radio.
Men, women, marriage, what's the point? Join Father John Ricardo as he walks us through God's plan for a marriage, Ephesians 5, Fatherhood and the Dignity of Woman. Learn why there are two creation stories. What does it mean to be children of God? And what does Paul mean when he says, wives be subject to your husbands? All this and more is covered in Father John Ricardo's 4-CD set, What's the Point? To purchase your copy, go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on What's the Point under the Store tab.
I'm back with Brian Schumann, who is a good friend of mine over the last few years through playing Hickory Golf together, golf with wooden shafts from the 1920s, a la Bobby Jones, and talking about really a story of survival, a story of choosing to remain alive, choosing to remain engaged in life, choosing to move ahead after the loss of his daughter Jordan, car accident just before Christmas of last year. The Jordan Schumann Foundation for Kindness, Brian, you say is the purpose is to provide one-on-one acts of kindness to those less advantaged. Just how is the foundation going to do that?
Well, you know, very quickly we realized, you know, we're not Bill and Melinda Gates. It's not a humanity. We can't change and fix the entire world. So we said, you know, Jordan was a very personable one-on-one person. So small acts of kindness, and it may not even be one-on-one. It may be larger than that already. And right away, for instance, a local radio station asked us if we would help a Marine passed away. He was a career Marine, 45 years old. He was in the service for 19 years. And our family, we happen to own a restaurant that Jordan was very instrumental in down in West Palm Beach. And they said, hey, you know, would you mind or would you like to host a lunch for the 20 people in the family after the funeral? And we said, sure. So, you know, the first act of kindness, so to speak, was the Jordan Schumann Foundation for Kindness sponsored and hosted this luncheon for these 20 people after the funeral service for their, you know, fallen family member who was a Marine, you know, and that was an unbelievable pleasure to do. You know, down there as well, we're in the process of doing a shoe drive. We started out by making a commitment to the foundation and the restaurant together to feed 500 homeless people for one day. And in the process of that, the people who run the homeless shelters, they said, you know, the food is great and they'll love it and it'll be wonderful and that's great, but what they really need are shoes and work shoes and boots. So a lot of them do want to go to work, but if they have no shoes or no work boots, they can't really work. So just coincidentally, which apparently there are not coincidences, everything's for a reason to a certain extent, Jordan loved shoes. Her name is Schumann. So
she wasn't Imelda Marcos, though, I take it.
No, but she loved her shoes. She definitely loved her shoes. There's no doubt about it. But one of the next things we're doing is the Jordan Schumann Foundation for Kindness shoe drive. So I think at this point already we have, I don't know, 150, 200 pairs that have been donated and dropped off and whatnot down at the restaurant. And our goal is to get up to
it. Now, I didn't mention that you own a restaurant in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Yes.
What's the name of that restaurant?
Jordan actually named it when she was 13 years old. It's called Teddy's Wing Shack. And Jordan gave the name Wing. It's a very Key Westy style, indoor-outdoor, fun, casual restaurant. And Jordan gave it the name Wing Shack when I was searching for various names and whatnot, because wings are our specialty down there. And she gave the name. And unfortunately, about a month after we started construction, my dad suddenly passed about 8-9 years ago, and we put his name on it, on the front of it, so it became known as Teddy's Wing Shack. And that's the basis of some of these operations, because Jordan, all through living in West Palm Beach in the winters and whatnot, and going to school in University of Miami, spent a lot of time there. So, you know, as a base of operations, having the shoe drive, we already decided we're going to do 500, we call them dry packs for homeless people, where the dry pack will have toothpaste and toothbrush and a wash-up cloth and a soap and shampoo, and we're distributing those in her name. Or anything we could think of, or anybody that comes to us that we can try to help on this type of level. Jordan was very, very concerned about people that were less advantaged, you know, less fortunate than she.
Let me remind our listeners that more information about this can be found at the Jordan, and that's spelled like J-O-R-D-A-N, Schumann, 1N, foundation.org. You also have created Jordan's Wishing Well. Tell us about that.
Very shortly after the accident, an associate of mine that's been with me for over 20 years in the fair business, who was very, very, very fond of Jordan, his daughter and Jordan, about the same age, and they both helped out at the fair for many, many years, and Jordan worked directly with him at the fair, fairs for many, many years, all through high school and college. And he came up with the idea for Jordan's Wishing Well, actually. And then through the generosity of one of the carnival companies, the amusement companies called Powers Midways, they made this wishing well. It's about 6.5-7 feet tall, and it's a real wishing well, and it's beautiful, and it has Jordan's name on it, Jordan's Wishing Well. And the idea and the concept is we will have it prominently featured at our fairs wherever we travel, and there's a little pad that says, "This is my wish for my family," and they will drop it in the wishing well. And at the end of the fair, in each local market we are at, the fair will grant wishes.
Wow.
How many we can afford and how many, you know, we can do. This was really, the foundation's name is the overriding umbrella, but Jordan's Wishing Well has become its own standalone part of the foundation. And the fair will, a portion of all the proceeds coming into all the fairs from now on are going into the foundation. And at the end of each fair, hopefully we'll find some families locally that put some wishes in there, and if we can make them come true, then that's Jordan continuing to do her kindness and continuing her legacy.
Brian, I warned you I was going to do this, so I don't want my listeners to think I'm probing too hard into these sensitive areas of your experience, but I want our listeners to learn from your experience, because I think, you know, too often, and I've said this on the show before, that we avoid issues of personal suffering and personal fear, even suicide, too much in our discussion of spiritual things. I know, because you and I were in touch somewhat right after it happened, and a little more later on, but how did you actually survive, continue to, you know, put one foot in front of the other after this happened?
Number one, I guess it depends how you define survive. I don't know if I have survived yet. I don't know if I will survive. But the only way I've gotten to today over the last 5 months was one breath at a time and one foot in front of the other, like you just said, you know. And I've come to believe that the term that a lot of people use, moving on, I don't think that's correct. I don't believe in moving on. You can't move on or move away from something like this or get past something like
this. No, there's no closure.
You know, you move forward is all you do. And moving forward is one foot in front of the other. You know, it just moves you forward, going one step at a time. And sometimes it's 1 minute at a time. Sometimes it's 1 hour at a time, 1 day at a time. But you're moving forward as whatever pace your heart and your mind and your body will let you go. And sometimes it's very, very snail's pace. And other days, you know, you get very excited, and you kind of, you're excited about seeing her at the fair on a 10-foot by 7-foot tall banner. You know, my first thing when I see her every time with a wishing well is I cry. Every single day I pull up, you cry, because you realize the reality.
And that's at your restaurant.
And the restaurant is, you know, if something happens like this, and especially when you're so close to somebody, every single thing reminds you of them.
Right.
Every single thing.
What has this done to you spiritually? Can you talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, sure. I mean, it's, I guess you would have to say that it's opened me up, you know. I mean, when you're searching, you're searching. And when you're a searcher, you go anywhere you need to go to find the answer or find what you're looking for. You know, like an archaeologist will go back thousands and thousands of years, you know. I'm searching. I'm searching to find her. I'm searching to find her essence. I'm searching to find out how I can be together with her again.
Do you believe in heaven, Brian?
I have my own beliefs that I believe, yes, I believe that there is a heaven. I believe that it's not up there. I believe it's down here with us, side by side. I believe that there's a very thin veil between us and the afterlife and the other side. And I believe that they are, and Jordan, I 1,000% believe Jordan has been directing every facet of what I'm doing and have done over the last 5 months. Things that are just impossible to explain have been coming to me.
Well, I remember, I'll give our listeners an example of one thing that I witnessed that you didn't.
What's that?
And that is, well, you know, you remember because I told you, we were at a dinner of all men golfers in Pinehurst, North Carolina. And it was actually a dinner that was connected to the beginning of the Jordan Schumann Foundation. It was about 20 of us at a long, narrow table, and it was a TV at the end of the table that was showing a baseball game. And we all stood up to actually observe a kind of moment of silence, a moment of prayer for Jordan. And just at that moment, I looked at the TV screen. I guess I shouldn't have. But on the monitor, the LCD monitor, baseball park, the word Jordan came up. I mean, it obviously had to do with whoever was at bat or pitching or whatever. But the word Jordan flashed up at that moment that we did that.
Yes, I remember that, yes. And that's one of many, 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 if you want to call them coincidences, you can. I don't really think they are. I don't believe that they are. I believe that she had such energy and such force when she was here, and I believe that her energy and force is multiplied now where she is now, and just so many things have been happening like that. A reporter had me on TV two nights ago because she came down to the fair to cover the fair.
It was this is the Nassau Coliseum Fair?
This is at Brookhaven, Long Island right now. This is Brookhaven, Long Island. We opened up last weekend, Memorial Day weekend. This woman came down to cover it for a TV station. She had no idea who I even was. She did not know that I owned the company that ran the event. She didn't know my last name. She didn't know my first name. She didn't know anything. It was a lousy kind of weather day. We hadn't even set up the display. She came in, and I never usually do interviews anymore. But I went out to greet her for some reason. She said her name. I said hi. She said, I'd like to know all about the fair. I said, okay. I said, would you like to know at all about the foundation? And she said, what foundation? And I said, well, my daughter's name is Jordan Schumann. She goes, you're Jordan Schumann's father? So I said, yes. Why? Do you know her? You know who she is? She goes, I know her mother, Perry. I said, how do you know her mother, Perry? She said, I met her on a plane flight about 4 years ago as my just sitting in the same row, and we started talking. And we kept in contact. And I talked to Jordan because I knew she wanted to be a broadcast journalist. And tell me about the foundation. I have no idea of what this even is. We ended up doing an interview. She ended up shooting the wishing well on TV and the big banner of Jordan. She ended up doing an entire story on the foundation in addition to another story about the fair. And she had no idea that she was even coming to talk about this at all. None. She was placed there for a reason that day. She was placed on the plane 3-4 years ago for a reason.
The notion of an afterlife, I know that Christians and those from the Jewish faith have different beliefs. And I know one time when I read up on what some Reformed Jewish theologians thought of as heaven or eternity, they really talked about the lineage of the family and how the family, from father to son to daughter to grandkids and so forth, that takes on a significance in terms of history and eternity. Is that something you feel?
I talked to one of the most well-known teachers in Israel, a friend, somebody that I befriended years ago and tried to help out, an Orthodox rabbi. His father, who's in his mid-80s, is a big rabbi in Israel. We had this conversation, too, because as you said, I reached out to Brother Mark, I reached out to rabbis, I reached out to anybody that can give me any sense of what this is all about. And, he explained it in terms of that this life we're in right now is kind of a cocktail party, but the next phase is the real affair. That's the real wedding. That's the real bar mitzvah. That's the real big party afterwards. This is the...
Well, we believe that, too.
This is the preliminary.
Catholics believe that.
And, when something like this happens, and I've talked to other parents who are unfortunately in the same situation, who have come to believe that our loved ones are in a much, much, much better place, we're not afraid of going there. We're looking forward to going there almost. We know it's not our time, and we know that each day we wake up, we're still here, and we have to do what we have to do, and we have to do what our loved ones want us to do and what we think is right. And I know that for me, working this foundation and getting it started and continuing her name, I mean, I love nothing more than being able to talk about her and look at our pictures all day long and, you know, talk to my family about it and friends about it, and people are just throwing support at it, you know, just... because they feel the same thing. I mean, you know, and I think that she'll meet me and my dad will meet me and kind of looking forward to it. I mean, it's just everything I know about it and everything I've researched and talked to people and my own heart and my own belief. It sounds wonderful.
Now, is this an attitude or knowledge that you had firmly before you lost your daughter?
No, I don't want to die at all. I was scared of it. No, this is all in the last, 5 months. Now, somebody out there could say, well, he's in shock, he's in denial, he's this, he's that. Well, you know, you can say whatever you want, but, you know, when you do this kind of amount of research that I've done, if you want to call it research, and it's basically just seeking out people such as yourself. We had a nice, lovely, long, long dinner with Claire, your lovely assistant, and we talked about spirituality for a couple hours. And, I mean, people like yourselves and, you know, almost everybody I've spoken to, everybody I've spoken to about this has opinions, has feelings, has wishes, has hopes, has desires that there is an afterlife, and they believe that there is an afterlife. And no matter what religion that the person has been, everybody says, it's got to be more than this. It's got to be somebody bigger than us, all of us. There's got to be something bigger out there. I mean, Jordan put me, again, when I say Jordan put me, that's my belief. Jordan put me in a record store in the middle of January in East Hampton, Long Island, New York, when nobody is in East Hampton, Long Island, New York in January, because obviously it's a summertime playground of the rich and famous. She put me in a record store with a gentleman that I just happened to see across the way in a very small record store, and it was Jimmy Fallon from TV.
Right.
And it was just two guys looking for records, and I got to tell him Jordan's story and all about her and what unfortunately happened. And he said, hey, tell me what I can do to help.
Wow.
And that's been the situation since her accident. I got a call out of the blue by a friend I haven't talked to in years. He did come to the funeral, but I haven't talked to him in years before that. He says, hey, would you like to go, if you're going to be in Florida, how would you like to play with me and Joe Namath? Joe Namath is an icon. He's being from New York. I mean,
he's an icon for me. That's my generation.
I mean, he is Joe Willie's the man, Broadway Joe. And I got to hang out with him for 2 days. He's a father, a couple of daughters, and I got to talk to him about my daughter and about the foundation. And he said, let me talk to my daughters. Let me see what they think about, and maybe see how we can help. I don't know these people. I never met them before, these people. And it just people are coming into my life, and spiritual people as well. I just don't think they're by accident, because none of these people came into my life before. So why all of a sudden, at my age of 56, would all of a sudden these people be coming into my life, just left and right, all wanting to help promote Jordan's name, her honor, her memory, and her legacy?
Did you ever find yourself praying just out of nowhere?
I say all the time, I'm not a super-duper religious person, I don't think. I used to call myself more socially religious than real religion. I respect all religions. I respect Judaism especially. Obviously, it's what I was raised in. But absolutely, I mean, just out of nowhere, I'll say, oh, God, dear God, please bless my baby girl. I must have said it 10,000 times already. Just bless my baby girl and just take care of her and just make sure she's okay.
She is.
I she's better than okay. I believe very strongly that she's better than okay. And
did you ever ask God to make sure that the dad's okay?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I have a list. I have a list. Yes. No, I have a list. Yes. But it's thoughts with her.
How is Jordan's brother done with this?
It's one of the things my counselor, Pat, has mentioned to me is that every single person grieves differently and that you have to respect each person and how they grieve. And that many times in families, which we have an unbelievable, one of the things Jordan was most proud of is that even though her mom and I got divorced when she was only 4 and her brother was 6, we have all maintained an incredibly close relationship to the point where, you know, her friends would say, this is as they got older, high school, college, her friends would say, Jordan, how come your dad's hugging your mom? And she says, well, you know, they were married and they still love each other. I said, well, yeah, but they're divorced. And she's, yeah, so? Like, she loved the fact that Perry's husband and I get along so well. And the entire extended families all got along incredibly well. Every play my son was in, my daughter was in, we all would pick one or two whole rows and we all go to support them because it's all about the kids in our life, in our minds. My son is different than me. He grieves in his own way, which, you know, we've talked about. I believe he's not as he's a little more quiet about it, I believe. I think a little more, introspective about it. I've gone completely the opposite way. I gain strength and energy from everybody else's support of me. He's very, very strong on his own. His mom is very, very strong on his own. You know, I may appear to look strong by doing this foundation and doing the wishing well and all that, but really it's just from being in such a vulnerable, weak position that I'm gaining strength from every single person that comes into my life that can offer me help and support.
How is this? I mean, I asked you before how this has changed you spiritually, but, you know, I get this sense in the time frame I've known you, maybe 3 years now, 3.5 years, it's actually kind of changed your personality. Do you sense that?
That it has changed my personality?
Yeah.
I think that, well, I mean, I'm not happy.
Well.
I'm not happy. I'm sad.
It seems to me you're very sensitive to the, you know, to where other people are.
Yeah.
To the sufferings of others.
I think that that's a very, very, very true statement. I think that, you know, I always was, I believe, a sensitive person. Jordan and I would watch certain movies, and I would cry every single time in the same spot. I said, Dad, the spot's coming now. Please don't cry again. You don't have to cry this time, but I would. I mean, I've always been sensitive, but when something happens to you, you know, my rabbi told a sermon one time about all the bad things that happen, you know, in other parts of the world. And when 9/11 happened, somebody wrote an op-ed piece, I guess, in the New York Times, and the subject, the title was, Do You Get It Now? Until it happens to you, until it happens in your neighborhood, or until it happens in your family, you can't identify with it. Or you really, it's a very hard thing to try to, you know, have empathy or understanding. Everybody says to me, every single person says when they hear about it and they see me for the first time, they look at me, they shake their head, they say, I'm so sorry, there are no words, I can't even comprehend. That's what everybody says. And I say, no, you can't. Because something like this, you cannot comprehend until it happens to you. But, as I'm learning, you can, when you hear about bad things in other people or whatnot, you can try to help, you can try to support, you can try to offer empathy, you can try to just be there for them. And sometimes, as a close friend of ours said to me, Mr. Bill Engelson from Pinehurst, he said to me, several people wanted to call, but they didn't know what to say.
Right.
He said, in his infinite wisdom, which helped me a lot, he said, you know, he called me and he said, so-and-so wants a call, and so-and-so wants a call, but they don't know what to say, so they're afraid to call. He says, you know, what I said to them, I said, you know, maybe we're just supposed to listen.
Right.
And by him saying that and allowing me to talk and talk and talk was invaluable.
Yes. Well, you know, Brian, I think we've come to the end of our time here, but you've done exactly with this time on Church and Culture what I'd hope you do, and that is to tell your story in a way that might be helpful to others who either have gone through these things recently or in the past or who may one day face them. And I want to remind our listeners that Brian Schumann has created the Jordan Schumann Foundation for Kindness. Go to jordanschumannfoundation.org or go on Facebook and Look up Brian Schumann's page, and that's Brian with an I, not with a Y. Brian, thanks for being on Church and Culture today. I think you've been remarkably open, and we appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
To all of you listening, please join me here on this day at this time next week.
If you have any comments or questions about Church and Culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net. The irresistible story of Tom Sawyer is being retold in a presentation by the Explorers Theater Troupe. This heartwarming adaptation follows Tom's adventures and never-ending mischief. Performances are June 3rd at 7 p.m. and June 4th at 2 and 7 at the Riverside Arts Center in Ypsilanti. This family-friendly show celebrates the joys of family, love, and friendship. Tickets start as low as $8 and a maximum of $35 per family. A special performance on June 2nd at 10 a.m. for just $3. Tom Sawyer at the Riverside Arts Center, June 2nd through the 4th.
The following is a message brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
Jesus instructs us to not be afraid. Yet one common fear is that of loneliness or thinking no one cares. This can cloud our lives with disillusion and despair. However, we are never alone. As John's Gospel and letters emphasize, God is love and cares for us so much that he redeemed us through Jesus, his Son. And Jesus did not redeem us as strangers, but as people he knows well enough to call by individual name. On Easter morning, Mary Magdalene rejoiced when she heard Jesus call her name, and Jesus is waiting for us to rejoice as he calls our names each day. Let us pray that we can hear God calling our name and know that we are loved as his children. This message is brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan, CBSMICH.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part by a gift made from our day sponsor. On this memorial of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, let's give thanks to God for preserving her from all sin and giving her a special role in our salvation. In response to her appearances at Lourdes and Fatima, let's devote our days to God, emulating her obedience, gratitude, adoration, and especially humility, by which she conquers the devil and achieves salvation through her son, Jesus.
This is Johnette Benkovic, and I'm excited to come to Toledo on June 11th to meet and talk with our Annunciation Radio family of listeners. Come and join me for a hot brunch and silent auction at Premier Banquet Hall starting at 10:30 a.m. Purchase your tickets today by going online to www.annunciationradio.com. That's www.annunciationradio.com or by calling 877-275-8098. I look forward to seeing you on Saturday, June 11th.
How can you keep your kids' minds active in the summer when they're not studying? Find out on today's Homeschool Heartbeat as HSLDA blogger Rochelle Reitz shares some handy ideas for maximizing your summer break.
Rochelle, do you have any strategies to keep the children's minds active during the summer?
Oh, yes. There's great summer reading programs, and that's something that my kids have enjoyed, the competition of being involved in getting prizes from the local library. I think Pizza Hut does a summer reading program and gives prizes. So they're getting to do reading that they enjoy and pick out their own books. I think it's a great chance if they did need to spend a little bit of time on something that might have been a struggle for them. Math comes to mind. I have one daughter who really hates doing flashcards, but I have found that she will be happily do those flashcards if they're in the form of a computer program. So she spends 20 minutes one day a week in the summer reviewing her times tables. I think there's also great opportunities sometimes in the community.